So I guess it's time to begin. Welcome. Good afternoon, everyone. I am very pleased so many of you are interested in advanced analytics and in particular in the combination of SQL Server technologies, both older and newer, with the very new R and Cortana intelligence. Let me introduce myself and the session. First of all, my name is Rafał Lukawiecki. I have been what is now called a data scientist for the last almost 11 years. My job title has changed over the years. Originally, I was called a data miner, then I was called a predictive analyst, then I was an advanced analyst, and now I am a data scientist. But what I do hasn't changed at all. It's the same job, just a better job title. Of course, some things have changed for the better. Most importantly, the reason you are here, the technology became more powerful, easier, and much cheaper. That is a very important reason why so many organizations who previously couldn't even afford to think about advanced analytics are trying it now. So what I would like to do in this session is I would like to actually focus the beginning of it a little bit on what I do, and almost three quarters of it on the three technologies that I use most of the time. If you have any questions that I haven't answered, and I will stay around somewhere here after the session to answer a few questions, I always welcome them by Twitter at rafal.net is at your disposal. I don't tweet often, I only tweet when I think it's really interesting. So for example, yesterday I almost live tweeted Edward Tufte's fantastic keynote at the Data Science Summit on visualizations, and then I will go quiet for a few weeks, so don't worry, I'm not going to overwhelm you with tweets. I also have email, of course, but I respond to that very irregularly, so really, if you need to get hold of me, you are better off tweeting. All right, with that in mind, I would like to introduce the presentation as well as a couple of things that you may find useful. The main objective is to show you why you should combine SQL, R, and Cortana. In other words, why I don't use just one of these technologies, but why it is the combination that is very valuable. I also want to explain in between the technology a few examples of very real-world advanced analytical work projects that I have been doing for the last few years and very recently, and I want to highlight how that leads to this newly popular again notion of artificial intelligence. With that in mind, let me point out that you can also learn an awful lot from my company, both online and in the real world. Online, I teach data science and data mining. My esteemed colleagues Marco Russo and Alberto Ferrari teach data analysis expressions and Power BI, and there is a new course coming up very soon online. My colleague Christopher Webb teaches multi-dimensional expressions and SQL Server analysis services, whilst Carmel Gunn and Bob Duffy explain how to make good use of Excel for enterprise BI. And for all of the attendees at Ignite, we are offering a discount with this code 50ignite2016. We'll get you $50 of our online training courses. Also, you will find this PowerPoint on the website as well as the PowerPoints that I have delivered in the pre-con, the pre-conference day on Sunday. Those PowerPoints are not available from Ignite organizers, but they are available at no cost from my company's website. You need to visit projectbotticelli.com/PPT and you have to register free of charge. Our registration email will be in your spam box, so make sure you visit over there and click the link to get the slides. If you would like to learn from me in person, I have created the first in the world online, sorry, not online, but the first in the world offline classroom-based hands-on training course, 5-day long training that focuses on combining Azure ML, Cortana Intelligence, SQL, and R. I have created this course last year in May. I have delivered it, I think, about 13 times, maybe 14 now. I have trained 230 new data scientists from very large, respectable, and small and medium companies around the world. So these are intimate courses where you do end up spending a lot of time building the stuff yourself. And the nearest one to here is coming up on the 7th of November in Chicago. which I have a pleasure to deliver in a collaboration with a very friendly and fantastic company called SQL Skills. If you've ever ever done anything in the world of SQL Server, you probably have heard of Kimberly Tripp and Paul Randall, who run this business. It's with their assistance that I deliver this course in Chicago. We still have a few spaces in Chicago. London is sold out. Zurich, Oslo, and Stockholm are still available, and it would be wonderful to see you over there. All right, enough selling. Let's get started with advanced analytics. Why do my customers need advanced analytics today is a question I had to answer for the last 10 years. So I have written an essay, about 5,000 words essay, that explains those reasons. But I would like to summarize it for you in just these 5 points right now. First and foremost, most of my customers want to find out why something failed or succeeded. They usually use intuition to find answers to many questions. They use data to answer other questions. But that confirmation of their intuition is not always easy to get. And advanced analytics and data science gives us that confirmatory ability to not be sure, because you can never be sure in data science, but to have a statistical, meaningful dose of certainty that the reasons you think are the reasons that led to success or failure. Or perhaps to even explore, so not necessarily confirmatory, but also in an exploratory manner, to explore what those reasons could have been. Naturally, a lot of my customers want to understand their own customers. They want to understand why certain products sell and other products don't. They want to find out patterns. My life is all about a pattern search. I absolutely adore patterns, and I always spend time looking for a pattern that I haven't yet seen before. For my customers, finding a pattern very often means a lot. It means profitability. For example, this world-famous manufacturer of hi-fi equipment, whose name, unfortunately, I cannot mention, but I'll say it's very old and based in Europe, wanted to figure out why certain speakers weren't selling the way they were hoping they would sell. They thought there was something there, but that turned out not to be the case. Through exploration using data science, by using SQL Server, data mining, and Excel, and some of the more modern technologies too, we found that the connection was actually between something that they completely did not even think about. 20 nanoseconds of cognition, that blink of an eye, was all the customer needed to do to realize the value of the pattern they just found. Those first two reasons are by far the most frequent two reasons why people do advanced analytics amongst my customers. However, many of them also want to accurately plan future. Planning future is a great application of advanced analytics. Forecasting was designed for it. I will show you 5 demos in this session, and the last 2 demos will actually focus on forecasting. In the very, very, very last demo of the session, we'll do forecasting in our server, and we will surface that through the cloud and Power BI. And you'll see how my customers want to do it that way. But I have a word of warning to you. If you are new to this area, do not focus on forecasting as your first and early projects, because forecasting is not easy to do. It's not because it's somehow more difficult than the rest. It's because forecasting that you are supposed to do has to be better than what your business colleagues already know how to do quite well. You are not looking for a new forecast, you are looking for an improvement to their probably already very good forecast. What we call in business moving the needle is very hard. Increasing the quality of an existing forecast that business people have focused their efforts probably for decades, their intuition using data science is possible, but not for the faint-hearted. As Americans say, this is not a low-hanging fruit. So if you are going to be starting in data science and advanced analytics, pick definitely something easier. Don't pick forecasting as your first project. In the future, so this is a small reason today, but growing in importance, I have approximately a handful of clients who do it today. Experimentation using data science before you make decisions will be the next big buzzword in business. In other words, instead of just saying, well, we should go ahead with this or that promotion, we are going to test it, or we will experiment in a very measured way using tools like R or SQL or Cortana, And we will derive from this modeled experiment answers that will give us much more than just intuition in deciding whether that promotion is a good or a bad idea to go ahead with. And in the future, so this is definitely looking into 5+ years from now, possibly 10 or 15, people will make autonomous decisions based on the models they built using these approaches and technologies. Those autonomous decisions will lead to a certain interesting loop closing itself. The model you build will change the business behavior of your customers. Your data will change as a result. Your model will change, and the decisions will change too. This is, in essence, artificial intelligence by the back door. Maybe it's not the sexiest way to think of artificial intelligence, but it is, without a moment of doubt, artificial intelligence in the easiest way. You could place it in your business in a meaningful way that will impact your business, not just make things nicer or more exciting and so on. So there you go. The 4 or 5 reasons why my customers use advanced analytics today, data science today, or artificial intelligence today. Let me explain the difference. I'll do it rather quickly. You can read about it much more online and also on my website. But because we use this terminology so interchangeably, I would like it to be a little clearer. So first of all, the easiest one is advanced analytics. There is really no definition of advanced analytics. Advanced analytics is what we do when you have to acquire, prepare, basically cleanse, explore, visualize data before you do some data science on it. This is not a new idea. We've been doing this for a long time. But what is new is that increasingly one person can do most of it. In reality, 3 people usually do all of it, not one person. But the tools and technology democratize advanced analytics so much that I guarantee your children will be bringing back homework that will require advanced analytics to figure out whether tree production in North Carolina impacts the sales of paper in California. And they will be told to extract, prepare the data, and perhaps build even a model at some point, depending where at school they are. This will mean that we will be making far more factual decisions in the future. And honestly, I cannot wait for the time when people are more based on their facts when they say things, but that's another story. Data science, ladies and gentlemen, is something that I define in a very specific way. And that's not the only me who defines it. My alma mater, where I studied this stuff long time ago, also defines it this way. It's definitely not a marketing term, and it's definitely not software. Data science is the scientific method of reasoning applied to decisions you make based on data and facts. Basically, it's a well-known old process without which we wouldn't have medicine today, without which there would be no pharmaceuticals, without which Albert Einstein would have not been able to do anything, possibly even Isaac Newton. It's an idea that you can hypothesize anything you can dream about, but before you decide whether your hypothesis has or hasn't got merit, you will derive some data, facts, we call this data, through experiments, and then through a process of careful logical reasoning, you will arrive at a conclusion. And that conclusion is unfortunately never a yes or a no. Unfortunately, in data science, just like in the scientific method of reasoning, all you can say is a maybe, but it is a very strong maybe. It's a maybe with a measurable dose of uncertainty that your maybe is a wrong one. So it's a strongly maybe yes, or weakly maybe yes, or strongly maybe no, or weakly maybe no. And in case you think that this is just a consultant's answer, not to give an answer to the customer, it can be abused that way too. So for that reason, you have to be good at measuring how likely it is that your maybe is erroneous. And thankfully, we have tools and technologies to do that. That's one of the reasons we use tools like R, because they give us a very easy way to measure how likely it is that your proclamation is an incorrect one. In terms of technologies, data science intersects, obviously, machine learning and data mining, whatever you wish to call it, a fair dose of statistics, a small sprinkling of big data, and a huge, massive amount of data wrangling. fighting with the data is what I do 80% of my time, and everybody in business says the same. Never less than 60, frequently as much as 100% of my project is wasted on fighting with data. I did this thing because it's not really wasted. About half of that is very useful. We call it feature engineering. When you derive new columns from which you find patterns, the rest is really unpleasant, and it is cleansing, changing formats, aggregating, changing granularities, and so on and so on and so on. So think for a moment now. If we spend 80% of our time in data science fighting with the data, what should be the most important tool that we use in data science? Well, have a think about that. I'll tell you in a moment. Behind the scenes, everything you do is your first step towards artificial intelligence. As you build these models from the data, those machine learning models will let you at some point, hopefully not too soon, make autonomous so-called intelligent decisions. Those decisions will change your business. You will start giving loans to more people you should be giving them to and not to those who shouldn't be getting the loan. You will be promoting the products that the customer is interested in, and you will spam them less, and you will increase their loyalty. As a result, the business will change, but that means the data will change, so the machine learning model will change. And when a machine learning model changes, it makes different decisions. How often do we change the model? Depends on what you do. I have customers who rebuild the model on a nightly basis. I have customers who rebuild the model on a quarterly basis. I have customers who haven't rebuilt the model for a while, and I usually frown upon that and remind them that they should do it, but that's another story. It's kind of amazing that sometimes these things still work. I actually have one customer who is not updating the model. The model isn't working. The model is broken, but they are still using it because they feel it's working for them. I'm not going to tell you which customer is that. This is somewhat pathological situation. It's no better than guessing, but anyway, what can you do? What I have just described to you is an autonomous system that understands itself. It's a slow artificial intelligence, one that changes over days, weeks, or months. But that's what I think the world is ready for today. What I'm worried about is those systems where it's so fast and so quick that the human component isn't quite there. If you remember the keynote, there was a mention of human in the process. I think that's a very important part, and I'm very glad that that surfaced in the presentation. A system that perceives its environment and takes action to maximize its chance of success is one of the more popular definitions of AI, and that is exactly what you will be doing by just starting with machine learning. And if you are going to be doing this, then you need some people. A real team, real world team, is not one person. It is a team that consists of a domain expert who knows the business, data expert who knows hopefully SQL, but also where all the data is in the company, and the data scientist who knows how to build the models. I have never yet worked on a real project where I didn't have at least those three people. In an ideal project, I want them to be full-time working with me. And that data expert, let me stress, is usually someone that comes from the customer's organization. Very often, there is a guy or a lady who has been looking after a data warehouse. I love finding that person. That person usually has not just the knowledge of the technology, but knows, oh yes, Rafael, there is this data point that we added maybe to the warehouse 5 years ago, could be useful for you today. If you think about a real example, well, let's say, in healthcare, a hospital wishes to reduce readmissions, well, we would have exactly three types of tasks done by these three people. The domain expert here is the hospital manager who says, Rafael, I would like you to reduce readmissions. So I ask the hospital manager, what is a readmission? And the hospital manager usually says, well, Rafael, this is when a patient comes back to the hospital within 30 days after we released them for the same reason. And this is dangerous for everybody, not to mention very costly. So they want to reduce that situation by spotting those patients before prematurely releasing them. All right, so now what does my data expert has to do? To answer the question, if we have enough data, like a row of data, with all information about the patient, the disease, the ward, the treatment, the doctor, the anything that you can ethically, morally, and legally look at, And a flag at the end of this row of data which says, was readmitted, yes, no, or maybe a number of days since last visit to the hospital. If I can see these rows of data, then I, as the data scientist, can build a model. My question is there a predictable pattern that can predict whether somebody is being readmitted from the data I see? I look for the pattern. Maybe I use a decision tree, maybe a neural network. Usually, I don't use neural networks too much because they lead to the creation of so-called black boxes. Sometimes very accurate models, but ones we don't understand. I prefer to build models. I can explain to my customers, I know neural networks are very sexy, but the reality is that they are not as useful as people make them seem to be. There are much more boring and easier techniques which are far more important than neural networks. I wanted to be very clear here, even though, of course, for marketing purposes, we all talk about neural networks because it sounds very brainy and so on. And what do? Well, I build a model, and the model starts predicting, and I go to the hospital manager, and I say, well, how excited are you? I am capable of predicting when people will be readmitted. And the manager says, you know, Rafael, I'm not so excited because, yes, your model works, but it's only predicting for the obvious ones, the ones that, well, we could kind of do ourselves. So I think now, how could I change the data to make it a little bit more specific? How about I narrow the scope of the project down only to the patients that really matter? So I talk to the hospital manager. Is there a particular type of readmission that is important to you? And he or she says, absolutely. Could you do me a project for cardiovascular mortality and readmissions? No problem. My data expert filters the data, twiddles that, adds something else, removes something else. It's never as easy as one select statement. It's always a bit more complex than that. And now I build a model. Maybe I use a different technique and I give it to the manager. And you know what? I noticed something interesting. I noticed that the model is good, but if I were to shorten the window of time from 30 days to 2 weeks, the model would be even better. What do I mean by better, more accurate? What does it mean to be accurate? That takes one day on my course to understand. Okay, so at this point, my manager says, absolutely, Rafael, I would like to have a more accurate model. What do you suppose we should do? I think you should be looking at readmissions in 2 weeks, 14 days. Ooh, what a novel idea. Nobody does it that way. Everybody does 30 days. So what? Break the rule. And indeed, you will hear from the hospital manager that a readmission within 2 weeks is a much more important readmission to focus on than the four-weekly one, because that's the really bad one. The ones when people come like in day 28, 29 are not nice, but they are, you know, not as bad. The worst ones are really the ones closer to the date. So, wow, I've just learned something I wouldn't know if I wasn't working with the domain expert. And I give them the model, and the model starts making the decisions. And very often what happens is that the value of the model is not just that it makes decisions, but they learn something. They learn, why is this model picking on these people all the time? Let's see, if it's a neural network, you don't know. But if it is a decision tree, you look through it and, oh wow, that's because that word is not receiving that, but this supply of towels. Let's go back and see whether there is a problem with the towel supply, and voila, we solve the problem. So actually, if you solve a problem like that, what happens next is your model becomes worse, because there is now no more patients being infected with some towel problem. So you have to accept that failure is part of your success, which is very interesting. If you do a fraud detection project, you will catch the fraud. As a result, your model has to stop working until people invent new fraud. But of course, we don't wish that on your customers. Okay, I asked you a question about 3 slides ago. Do you remember what was my question? If 80% of my work is fighting with data, what should be the most important tool that data scientists use today? Well, I know the answer, which one it is for me, but I am going to share with you research. With permission from O'Reilly Media, from the fascinating data science salary survey that all of you should download, at least to figure out how much you should get paid. So free, O'Reilly.com, go download. But 30-page research in which there are plenty of nice graphs, like this one, would say that the number one tool we all use is called structured Query Language, SQL. What does it mean to you? What it means to you that, well, you came to Ignite 2016. Statistically, something like 70% of you are geeks. The rest are geeks in the making. When I say geeks, basically you like servers, and if you came to my session, the chances are you like SQL Server. You have a huge opportunity in your career to move into data science. And if you don't want to move into data science, don't worry, every data scientist needs one of you geeks. Why? Because data scientists actually are not that good at SQL. I have figured that out by visiting many customers of mine. I see it as a pattern over and over and over again. You go and you see, whoa, that's an interesting product they just bought. No names will be mentioned, which product, some popular technologies. Why are they spending time building these flows of stuff in this product? Because they don't know how to do it in SQL. Okay, this is the brutal answer. The less brutal answer is they could do it in SQL, but not as well as that other geek in the company, and they are afraid to do it in SQL because everybody then says, that's not how you write code on my server. Have you ever been in that situation where you have that SQL guy who says, no, you're not touching my server? Well, the solution is to make peace. And the peace has been made many a time when the data scientist either found a good data geek to work with them, or became one, or they somehow married those skills, but please do not manipulate data in the tools that were not designed for that. For example, is R and Python good for data manipulation? No and no and no, if you can do it in SQL. Wow, did I just say R is bad for something? Absolutely I did. R is great for many things, but not for data manipulation, for crying out loud. They only just invented group by. I'm not joking. Go and look it up. There's a package. Every data scientist is like, wow, dplyr, fabulous. I use it, of course I use it. What is dplyr for? It has a select and a group by, my goodness. Well done, well done. Cubes, don't worry, they are working on cubes. They'll discover cubes about 10 years from now. Anyway, in the meantime, my point is you should use the best tools for the purpose. And if you needed someone with a little bit of authority to stand in front of you and say that SQL is the best tool, let me be that person. I put my name underneath it. SQL is the best tool for all data manipulation, as long as you can use it. Sometimes you can't, and I will talk about those situations in a few moments. All right, Excel, we shall not even say a word about because we love to hate it, hate to love it, but we use it all the time, even if we don't say so. Why? Because Excel surfaces stuff, especially Excel with Power BI. It's funny, in this research, you can see Power Pivot appears further down the line. If Microsoft didn't keep changing the name of that product, it would be called Power BI today. In fact, that should have been Excel right from the beginning, but that's another story. And people from that team are in the room, so I'm not going to say anything I shouldn't say. All right, Python or R? Probably the second most popular question I get. Both is the answer. However, Python will be more popular in the future. Why? Because Python is a better language that is easier, more beautiful, but you will need R. In particular, if you want to be slightly more geeky, because Python will be for the easier stuff, whilst R will be for the narrower bottom part of the pyramid that supports data science. Inverted pyramid. Ready-made finished tools, Python data scientists, R data scientists, and over here you'll have all of the Spark, Hadoop, and the other guys. Very interesting skills, but also complex and expensive. Notice also Microsoft SQL Server, for the first time in history, is the number one commercial database platform used by data scientists. There is more to this, but I'm not going to discuss it since you can download it yourselves. What I would like to do now is I would like to zoom in on why do I use these three technologies. First of all, I don't work for Microsoft, so I can recommend to you what I do without fearing anything. And one of the things I am going to recommend to you is an old Microsoft technology that Microsoft asks me, please, Rafael, don't talk about it again. Well, I will limit myself how much I say because, you know, I have to be nice to my Microsoft hosts, but I will talk about it because it's so useful. That old technology is called SQL Server 2016 Data Mining because it's easy, it's visual, it's intuitive, it just works. It's as if Apple designed a data mining product. It basically knows what you want to do before you even know what to do. And if you're about to make a mistake, it usually corrects for it. I start almost every project with it, and I will be using it for at least the next 5 years. They will have to tear it out of my bloodied hands when they say they are deprecating this technology. They haven't yet, but they probably may. So just in case, keep an ISO of a suitably old SQL server and have an ISO of Windows 7, all right? And it wouldn't hurt to have it in two places. I use it all the time for every project at its inception because it's very visual. I'll give you a glimpse of it a little later. You can learn about it on my website in depth. I've got like 8 hours of material. And it's actually very popular. Unfortunately, Microsoft would fire me if I told you how popular is this component, but there you go, it's popular. Of course, it's not enough. Today, I need more. I need more power, especially when it comes to statistics. But the reason I need R is not just because of statistics. The reason I need R is because it gives me access to more than 7,000 packages of statistical software created for my pleasure by people who are way smarter than me, who are researching statistics and predictive analytics all the time. One example. I'm working on a project for the Department of Social Protection a good few years ago in Ireland doing fraud analytics system. And in fraud analytics, the thing you are looking for, thankfully, is rare, very rare, not seen often. We call it a rare event analysis or class imbalance problem. When you analyze data like that, you almost always have to trick the algorithm to somehow sensitizing itself to this rare event, because most algorithms will say, well, this is so rare, I'm just gonna ignore it because obviously it's not important. So how do we do it? Well, there are many techniques. I tried all of them. I did SMOTE, I did this, I did that, nothing worked. So I go and search and search and search and search and search, and suddenly something pops up and it says ROSE. I've never heard of it before. There was a package written in R, written by this lady who happens to be a professor of applied statistics somewhere in an Italian university. I believe it was Turin, could be Pisa. And I downloaded it. You know, this package was created only 1 month before I found it. And the reason I'm telling you this story is because, of course, it worked. It worked. Suddenly, I could deliver the solution to the customer because some ingenious professor created some intelligence that helped me and my customer deliver the goods. I could not do my job without that anymore. And I have, it's my estimate, I cannot validate it, but it's my estimate, somewhere around 100,000 such smart people around the world working for me. That's why not Python, by the way. That's why not Python. They are innovating only in R, even though R is a worse language, it's quirky, it's weird. Make Stack Exchange a good friend of yours even before you start it. And the other one is crossvalidated.com. All right, but it's still not enough. I still want more. What I want is Cortana Intelligence, in particular, Azure Machine Learning. Azure Machine Learning is a component I got to know about 4 years ago. And the reason I use it is not just because it has some advanced algorithms and you can deploy it as a web service, but because it is there. When I need to run quickly something, I cannot ask my customer to, well, download all of this stuff, install this, and I need 5 servers. You know, when I did my first advanced analytical project almost, 10 years ago, actually, right now, which, by the way, was a failure, I learned a lot from it, my customer had to spend approximately $70,000 on equipment, on hardware, just for Rafael to say, no, failure. You know, the customer wasn't entirely pleased. Thankfully, they reused the hardware for something else, but that's kind of expensive. Well, you don't have that problem anymore. You swipe your virtual credit card through Azure, and you get all of this superpower for that fraction of the time when I need to churn my data, and then I can forget about it. Just make sure you delete things, because otherwise they keep hitting your credit card longer. And yes, I've done that too. All right. Data in my practice is usually first on-prem, and when it's on-prem, it's in SQL Server 2016 in some dirty operational data store, you know, yet another delete me database. I use SQL Server in a very bad way, but I use it because it's great for keeping the data and piping it into the remainder of the system. If I happen to be working with a customer who has invested in a Microsoft parallel data warehouse, or an analytics platform system, which now is available without having to buy hardware, a SQL Server 2016 data warehouse, so much the better, because the data warehouse queries become much faster. What if my customer has unstructured data? First of all, there is really no unstructured data. There is only semi-structured data. There's always a little bit of structure. Well, then I use whatever I have. My favorite place to dump unstructured data is into a part of Hadoop called HDFS. Hadoop comes in two components. One of them is the Hadoop distributed file system, and I use usually Hortonworks data platform because it works on Windows and elsewhere, but I have used any deployment of Linux you can, on Linux and anyone you can think of. I've been using Hadoop for about 5 years now, mostly with a library that sits on top of it called Mahout. Or pick your name. Do I know Redis, Cassandra, or MongoDB? No. Do I use them? Yes. You know, that's just the way it is. Those days when you needed to know the technology inside out to use it, they're long gone. Let me be the first one. I could not do my job without a search engine and without Stack Exchange and wonderful communities like you. However, a good data expert on your team is very important, too. That helps a lot. He's usually called Bob when I'm working with him. Anyway. One of the things I use in SQL that I like a lot is its ability to combine Hadoop data with relational data and make me never ever see Hadoop as Hadoop. Here's an example of wanting to combine relational data perhaps with some readings about people who drive cars who are now applying for an insurance. Well, using the poly-based technology, they can be not only joined from different servers, but also queried using the same language that you have been using for three decades to query SQL Server, and my predicted premium comes out as if I was using SQL Server. For this magic to work, and indeed to use Hadoop almost in anything else, including Spark on top of Hadoop, it's not just Hadoop you want. You want Hadoop with a layer that makes those files, this mess of files, appear as if it was a relational database. This is usually called Hive. Hive is the most popular technology to use in Hadoop to put this order on those files. But what that means is that my customer is dumping Excel files into HDFS. Excel files have rows and columns. Well, then Hive, magically shows those columns as if they came from a database. That's the amalgamation of the Excels. If anybody ever tried to explain to you how they use Hadoop, and they do anything different from that, they are probably in 5% of Hadoop users. 95% of us use that technique in order to store unstructured data. If I am in the cloud, I use SQL. Azure SQL Database, part of Cortana Intelligence Suite, if you buy it that way, and that gives you also a slightly better price, or a Microsoft NoSQL Database, or Hadoop. And if I use Hadoop in the cloud, then that Hadoop is called HD Insight or Azure Data Lake. Azure Data Lake is two components in Cortana Intelligence. One is storage, and it's just Hadoop, like HDFS. And there is also an analytical component that sits on top of it, which allows you to write analytical software a bit as if you were using Spark, but not using Spark, but using Microsoft's proprietary technology based on language called USQL and .NET. So if you have a lot of .NET developers or you have people who are allergic to Java, Azure Data Lake is in general a very interesting proposition for big data analytics. Okay, let's zoom in on the first of the technologies, and I'm going to show it to you actually on the next in the next few minutes in a demo. The first technology is that old technology Microsoft asks me not to talk about, so I'm not going to talk too much about it, I'll just show it to you. This is SQL Server Data Mining. It's part of SQL Server Analysis Services, running in its multi-dimensional mode, but don't worry, you do not need to use cubes. You just give it flat data. The reason I use it, as you will see in the demo, is because it is highly visual and very easy to interact with, for example, by using Excel. So let me switch over for my first demo. I am going to open in Excel a file that contains sales, and I'm going to analyze it. I'm going to do market basket analysis using SQL Server Analysis Services 2016 data mining components. How do you do that? Well, you select the data, you go to the Analyze tab, and you press the friendly button that looks like a kind of ancient shopping basket. You click that, you press Run, and now SQL Server does it, and approximately 5 seconds later, we have our results. This is the bundles, and these are the ready recommendations. Project done. Do it in an hour. That's going to take you an hour or longer. Why do I use this technology? Because it's cheap, because it's fast, and it has only 8 bugs. And there are workarounds to about 5 of those 8. The other 3 are killers, so call me if you get one of the other ones. Are you stunned how quick and easy it was? You should be. Why do people not know about it? Because Microsoft do not market this technology. They never have. They've given up on it as quickly as they've given up on, all right, on Ajax, on XML, on tablets, on phones, long list. This is one of those. Meh, okay, let's not be too critical of people who are paying your invoice. All right, let me show you the model behind it. The model behind it is fabulously rich. You will actually see why and how some people buy certain products. This is still SQL Server Analysis Services, data mining technology, showing you on a very well-known data set, AdventureWorks, why and what sells what. Let me just make it a little bit bigger. And for example, somebody comes to your store and they are interested in a hydration pack. Maybe they are thirsty. So what do you sell them? People who bought a hydration pack? Can you see that? Is it big enough? Let me just make it a little bit bigger. People who bought a hydration pack were interested in a water bottle. Say, if you bought a water bottle, you need to stick it on your bicycle. Would you prefer a road? Yes, road bottle tool cage is a good idea. Well, sir, if you are interested in road bottle cages, how about I show you our newest model of Road 750? You get the idea. This is how upsell happens in a real world, but the model is there in the data. This is how you can find pivotal products, products that matter to the business. And no, there is no better visualizer than that in your price range on the market. I made an assumption about your price range, but since you are here, I know what it is. So yeah, it is. You can do things like that. You know, how cool is that? You know, that's in itself. Of course, I can write a predictive query that will make recommendations, but this is an old technology. Microsoft says don't spend too much time on it, so I'm not going to spend too much time, just one more last demo. Here is a pattern which shows you how, using a decision tree, neural network? Microsoft had neural networks for 16 years. No, it's insane that they are becoming, but they were not that useful, so let's not just them. Okay, yes, they had them and a few other algorithms like logistic regression and so on. The decision tree is the one I want to show you because I told you that beauty of a pattern is that you can see it, feel it, and understand it. So let me show you what the pattern is, but what's the model? The model is trying to predict the number of purchases the customer will make based on the demographic information, which is the input of the, as we call, independent variable, or the feature, as machine learning people call it. So these are my features, this is the label. All right, let's see the model. The model says that if I want to focus on people who buy 4 cars, 4 car people are labeled purple, you can see that most purple people will be the rich people. So the model tells you something you probably knew, but it confirms it, that wealthy individuals buy many products, and also not so wealthy, but still quite wealthy. But if you wanted to say, okay, Rafael, let's market to those good customers in this income bracket, could I select something else that would help me choose which ones are more or less likely to buy 4 cars or more? Sure, I could. This is on the next level of the tree. This beautiful visualizer tells me, focus on the number of children these people have at home. Because if they have 5 or more children at home and that level of education, they are more likely to be 4 or more car buyers. Can you trust it? Well, if you come on my course, I'll teach you how to read this plot, but this plot says, as you will see in a moment, absolutely yes. Those curves, known as lift charts, are saying yes, 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 this is a good model. Can I use it easily? Absolutely, even though it is in SQL Server, if you want to use it for predictions, for example, in Excel, that becomes as easy as get some data about non-customers of yours, hit the data mining tab, switch to the correct SQL Server where that database is, and then query the model, the decision tree that predicts the number of purchases, and tell it, hey model, predict for me the number of purchases, predicted purchases. And maybe if you want to predict the probability that somebody is a very valuable customer for a good measure, we'll predict the probability that they buy 4 cars. So I'm gonna call it prob 4 car buyer. All right, okay, next, finish. 4,000 predictions later, I have my predicted number of purchases. I can sort from largest to smallest, and the probabilities with which people will be buying four cars or more. That's as much as I'm allowed to show the old technology. So I'm just going to quit and move back to the new stuff. All right, so what's the new stuff? Well, the new stuff is, of course, R. And the reason I use R, as I already explained to you, ladies and gentlemen, is because not only it gives me access to all of that fabulousness of statistics, but because of those 7,000 packages of software. So I've been using R for about 4.5 years, and I've been using it before Microsoft acquired Revolution Analytics, and it worked very well for me. So when Microsoft decided to buy Revolution Analytics and make it part of SQL Server, I was very, very pleased and very happy. Right now, Microsoft has so many variants of it. There's the R Open, R Client, R Server. There's a version that runs on top of Teradata, on Linux, the one in the cloud, and the one that runs, of course, inside SQL Server 2016. I am going to show you that in a demo in a moment, in which I will show you why you want R in SQL Server. But in case you are wondering why you need R, and you already bought my argument that it gives you access to those packages of statistical software, the other one is that this is the magic bit that, if used by someone who knows what they are doing, will give you that measurable maybe. The maybe is not, you know, yeah, we should do that, but you will have the numbers, and you will have that dose of scientific method of reasoning in a toolkit that anybody out there who knows even a modicum of statistics will be able to validate. All right, rather than talk about it, how about I give you the third demo? This will be a very quick demo in which I show you how I validated whether a certain customer of mine has made a good or a bad decision. In a moment, I'm going to show you real data from a real project with real code. I cannot give it to you, but I can show it to you with customer's permission. The customer was in healthcare, and the customer decided that patients who suffer from dementia stay longer in hospitals, and they wanted me to validate that. So how did I go ahead with my validation? Well, first of all, I used RStudio. This is a free open source tool that works wonderfully well with the Microsoft R server, which I am, of course, using right now. I could be using any R I want. You can change which R engine you are using simply by going to global options and selecting the engine over here. This is where I have the other Microsoft Rs, the R Open, R Client, and so on. But of course, the biggest, the bestest, and the baddest is the R server. In many ways, this is a canon for the proverbial bird at this point. Why do we need R server? You'll see in the next demo. But in this demo, what I would like to do is I would like to load the data set, first of all, and I will show you very typical data about patients. There are spelling mistakes like alcohol, there's an O missing, then why is there a blank? Why is there a 99? Is 99 different from a never? You know, typical data set that you end up where nothing is really quite consistent, slightly clean, but not fully. Most importantly, I know whether a patient was suffering from dementia or not. That's when they are in a controlled dementia group. And I also know how many days they stayed in the hospital. So what will I do? My first thing that I will do for this customer is I'm going to try to visualize the difference in the length of stay. Using a function from, the ggplot2 library, which everybody uses for visualizations in R, using a ggplot2 qplot function, I'm going to plot for you a nice little pair of box plots. Without explaining how to read box plots, the box plot shows you the median. And it shows you that the median, the average, think about it as an average, that the average length of stay for patients with dementia is higher than the average length of stay for patients who don't have dementia, which is why the customer, I suppose, contacted me. So, are we happy? Are we going to say to the customer, bravo, well done? No. The reason I am using the box plot is because I want to show you something. Look at those notches, this thing and this thing. This is why we use a box plot. When you visualize data such as time, length of stay, profit, and so on, and you want to say that there is a significant difference, those notches must not overlap. That's why they are there. If the notches overlap, I can stop right now and I can tell the customer, I'm so sorry, my dear customer, yes, you are seeing a difference, but that difference is not statistically meaningful. Now, I can be wrong because you are never sure, but the probability that I am wrong making this statement is very, very low. And I explain how to calculate these probabilities, of course, on my course. At this point, the customer comes back to me and says, Rafael, but I want you to find anything useful in this data. So, oh dear, dear, this sounds like data dredging. If you've ever heard that term, data dredging is when the customer doesn't get the answer they wanted, they ask you to find the answer that they like in the data they gave you. Statistically speaking, that's not something you should be doing, but that's something that unfortunately people do, so I have to be very careful. By the way, in the big data world, that's what people do always. They start with the data and then they say, find me a question. No. Okay. All right, I'll help you find a question. All right, so what did I do? The customer wanted me to find something. The something, I'm not going to just explore for craziness. The something I was looking for is the fact that obviously the customer felt that there was some difference in length of stay. So I wrote 36 lines of R code. This is easy. Most of it is comments, as you see, to do a little visualization that looked like that. And this visualization, and I'm not going to explain it in too much detail to you, but this visualization basically tells my customer that if they change the question from, do patients with dementia stay longer in the hospital than those without? And they ask a question, is the hospital stay excessive? Define excessive. 16 days, suddenly there is something in the data. That level that I highlighted is one of the most hotly debated subjects in statistics, so I'm not going to teach you about p-values now. But let's say that for the purpose of this customer's question, I am prepared to give them a hint. Dear customer, go back, generate new data, do a new experiment, and focus on whether a patient stayed 16 or more days in the hospital. Give me that data, and then I will tell you the answer. And that's something that I wouldn't be able to do easily in Excel, in Python, in other languages. It would take me forever to write it. And here, with my friendly SQL Server and the data, I am able to do it in just about 36 lines of code. Well, that is one of the reasons I use R and SQL Server, but of course, this is a very simplistic use. That wasn't big data. That was just very straightforward analysis. Well, what if you want to work on big data? What if the customer has 10 million rows of data? R will not cope with it. Normal R, if you are lucky, will give you an out-of-memory error. If you are lucky, most of the time it will lock up your computer, blue screen if you have some faulty memory chips, it's a good memory test, but it will not give you the answer. So what do you do? Well, you either write your software in some horrendously old-fashioned way where you need to know about threads and cores, and it's kind of like we used to write software in the 1990s, if you remember, thread safety. Anyway, no, nobody does that. What you do is you spend some money and you get yourself R server, or maybe that limited version of it called R client, and you get parallelism, performance, scalability, and you don't need to move the data. It sits inside SQL Server. So rather than talk about it, let me show you. This will be the longest demo that you will see in this presentation. This is demo 4 out of 6. 5, did I say? I have 6 demos. I don't know. In this demo, I will show you how to do analysis on a 10 million row data set on my tiny little laptop over here, and I will show you something that wouldn't finish and then something that runs in fairly reasonable amount of time. And you may have some extra fun over here because sometimes this demo fails. When this demo fails, I have to reboot my computer because it fails because I'm going to do something I shouldn't do. I'm going to do the thing that cannot work because it kills the computer. So what's the deal? The deal is I'm going to stop it in time before it kills my computer. But sometimes I don't manage to stop it in time. And that's the fun part when the demo crashes, okay? So we'll see. All right, let's see. First of all, I'm gonna run this code. This code, let me just make sure everything's good. Check, check, memory, monitor, everything's right. All right, this code is not gonna crash it. This code is okay. This code will just load 10 million rows of data into normal R using normal RODBC, R's Open Database Connectivity Driver Technology. ancient technology for connecting to any database in this galaxy. The data is coming to R, and in a moment, I will be able to show it to you. It will take approximately 25 seconds to read this data, which is, of course, slow, but, you know, who cares? Oh, 23 seconds, lucky day. Okay, let me show you the data. Let me show you the data. The data is here. This is the 10 million rows representing people who took mortgages. Now, I have to be very careful. I cannot touch the scroll bar. If I touch the scroll bar, that will kill the computer. So I'm moving the mouse away from the scroll bar to show you the data. You will see in a moment a few rows representing typical American mortgage scores. Somebody with a credit score of 645 bought an 11-year-old house, was 3 years in employment, not too much credit card debt, they bought in year 2000, and good news, they did not default on a mortgage. Zero means good news. The question is, can I predict from this data who will and will not, or who is or is less likely to default on a mortgage? Well, to do that, I am actually going to build what's known as a logistic regression model. This model will never finish building itself. So I'm going to run it, but I'm not going to be paying attention to you very much because I need to figure out when to kill it before it kills me. But I'll just explain it very quickly. This symbol here means as a function of what? Predict default as a function of house age, year of purchase, credit score, years, employment, credit card debt. Basically those columns you've seen. This means I am building a generalized linear model using logistic regression, one of the most popular techniques to do it, and this measures how long this takes, except it will never finish, so there's no point me even doing system time over there. All right, so let's have fun. Run, go to the performance monitor, and see what happens. R is going to start eating memory. It's still behaving, 1.2 gig, not too bad. I'm going to kill it when it starts thrashing the computer. There you go. It's going to go to 90% any moment now, Rafael. Okay, don't push it, Rafael. Show them a little more, but not too much. Okay, I have to kill it now. Go for kill. And task, kill, please. We got lucky. No, that's good news. Thank you. Well done. This is good news. I've managed to kill it before it killed me. If I didn't, that would be the phrase we just heard pronounced. All right. Okay. Trust me or don't trust me. Try it in R. It will never finish. I was never able to do this stuff in normal R. So what can I do? Well, I can use R server. For that demo, I'm going to show you Microsoft's pre-release version of tools for Visual Studio that lets you work with R. They are known as R tools for Visual Studio, currently in version 0.4. No, they are not yet as stable as they should be, but they are pretty good enough to get started. I could have done this in R Studio. Line for line, I could do exactly the same thing in R Studio, but I want to show you what the next tools will look like. All right. So what are we going to do? The first thing we are going to do is we're going to specify where is the connection to our SQL server. That executed on my R server very quickly, as you see. I'm using Microsoft R server, and I pointed to my local server, which is why server name begins with a dot, \\, because it's a semi-Linux product, so every backslash has to be escaped. The database is mortgages. The table is more default. Word of advice, do not do \*, because \* cannot be parallelized. That's why you are better off specifying the columns, because it can parallelize it in SQL Server better. And this means, of course, Windows authentication, integrated authentication mode, one of the nice features of SQL Server. I don't need to pass usernames and so on. Alrighty, I created a connection. Now I'm going to read and summarize this data. Observe, functions begin with letters Rx. Rx is a Microsoft replacement in R for a well-known function. For example, instead of summary, we have Rx summary. Why is it prefixed Rx? Because it uses the parallelizable external memory algorithm architecture, which is the fundamental component of the R server that lets R work with enormous data sets without ever using too much memory. So using those functions, I am now reading the entire data set. How? From SQL Server, data is flying to my R server. I am not analyzing in SQL Server. I should be, and I'll do that for you in a few moments. However, because I want to show you that this would work even without doing it in SQL Server, we are going to run that logistic regression right now. Now, this unfortunately will take 2 minutes, so for that reason, I'm going to tell you a story while this is happening, and the story will begin with just pointing out that this is exactly the same stuff that we've done a few minutes ago in the normal R. Predict the risk of default. You know what that symbol means? As a function of house age, year of purchase, credit score, years of employment, credit card debt, and so on. The only difference is that I'm using RxLogit, another Microsoft function that is much better behaved in terms of its memory utilization. Why does it take 2 minutes? Because it needs to read the data 100 million times, and I am doing it in a fairly inefficient way. I am still doing it locally in an R server, but the data is flying all the time between SQL Server and R. So, takes a while, but look, it's barely using any memory. It's using like 600 megabytes for SQL Server, and the R host is barely breaking a sweat at something like 120 megabytes. So, not very time efficient, but certainly doable. And when it finishes, you will appreciate the value of being able to do it in 2 minutes. 2 minutes is much better than never finishing. How much better? Infinity times better. But it's not good enough. And also, it's not good enough if the data set was much larger. So what I'm going to do for you in a moment is I'm going to cache the data. In a moment, using these three lines, I'm going to create a locally cached fancy file called mortdefault.xdf, which will contain a replica of all of that data from SQL Server. Does it mean he's doing it in SQL Server? No, he's just showing off another technique. That is sometimes a good choice to consider because it can be very, very fast. Once I have this cached version of the data, just like before, I will build for you logistic regression, and you will see that it will finish faster. But there will be a price to pay for that convenience. And the price to pay for that convenience is that I am going to have to copy the data out of the safety and security of the database. And a lot of people are unhappy when you do it in an organization today, especially with sensitive data. So there you go, I'm not lying, 135 seconds, better than infinity, but still, we could improve on that. So let's get going. With those three lines, I have now started reading the data. It will take about 15 seconds, 14 seconds or so, to copy the data into a local file called mortdefault.xdf. That data, once it's copied, will allow me, there you go, 14 seconds, to build logistic regression a bit faster. How much faster? Look. Wow. That is why Revolution Analytics were in business. They invented this XDF format. They created technology for doing incredibly fast compute, even on a somewhat old laptop, on a very large data set. You will see the results will be there in a moment, in 20 seconds. Now, 20 seconds is much better than infinity, but it's also much better than 2 minutes. So is Rafael saying that SQL Server is actually a bad idea and we should do everything locally? No, because this is where the last part of this demo comes in. In the last part of this demo, I am going to create what's known as a compute context in SQL Server. I'm saying, now I want to be doing the computations on my super duper SQL Server. But you could have done that, if you wanted, on a Hadoop server. It would be Rx in Hadoop, Rx on Teradata, Rx on anything you've got out there that has computational ability. All right, I created the compute. I must switch the context, and that switches the context. From now on, everything I do executes inside SQL Server. If you want to go back and run locally, this would let me go back to the local context with all of its advantages and disadvantages. All right, let's do the logistic regression. Will it be faster or will it be slower than what you have seen before? Well, some of it will be faster, some of it will be slower. And my point is that I want you to understand why. I don't want to give you some demo where he pressed a button and things spat out in a second. I want to give you a real understanding of the advantages and disadvantages of how you combine these technologies. First of all, the reason you see nothing happening now is just because it will not report anything until it's finished. Now that it finished, you see that it completed this task in 22 seconds. So that's 2 seconds slower than working on cached data. Is that bad or is that good? It's significantly better because, don't forget the 15 seconds for transferring the information into the cache. So we are comparing not like for like, it's 22 versus 35. And I'll tell you more. If your computer was bigger, and especially if your data was bigger, this would be quickly outpacing what you can do in a cached version because there is only so much that you can cache. Basically, look at this, task numbers. Every task number is one of my 10 worker nodes. Why 10? Because in this parameter, when I was creating the context, I told it, give me 10 worker nodes. 10 is good for my laptop. For your big, muscular server, you may want to have more. So with those 10, as you can see over here, each of them took approximately a second to complete the tasks they were asked to do. If you had more computing power on a bigger data set, all of that happens in parallel. That's incredible. I can get billions of rows of data executing in the same 20 or 30 seconds. And that's why I need the R server, but not on a little small laptop, but of course on something a little bit more powerful and useful. And in case you are wondering what are the results of all of this analysis, let me just do a little visualization for you. The results are that it's very interesting to look at the age of the house at the moment somebody purchases it. Our logistic regression model says that the coefficient of house age is meaningful for houses purchased from approximately 11-year-old to 35-year-old. So if you are building a predictive model for scoring people's credit worthiness, do observe whether the age of the house is between 11 and 35 years of age, because it will enable you to build a more accurate prediction. And vice versa, if the age of the house is smaller than 11 or greater than 35 years of age, do not include this in your analysis based on the data I have shown you over here. Your data, of course, may vary. Oh, I forgot to show you the memory monitor. You have to trust me, it barely broke a sweat. There was nothing to see over there. So, with that in mind, why would I want anything else? Why would I want the Cortana Intelligence Suite? The reason I would like to use Cortana Intelligence Suite is because of how easy it is to interconnect all of those things to each other. In Cortana Intelligence Suite, I have all the benefits of SQL, I have all the benefits of R server, I have all the benefits of Microsoft made it for me, pre-configured NoSQL data stores. I have the visualization with Power BI, and you can even get access to those cognitive AI, artificial intelligence services. Go to other presentations. There are quite a few at the conference talking about them. They were part, of course, of the keynote. I'm sure you have seen them over there. Also, if you are likely to be doing this seriously, and you are seriously thinking of spending a few dozen or hundreds of thousands of dollars on building advanced analytics, do consider getting good consulting on it. And Microsoft is offering very interesting type of bundled consultancy with Cortana Intelligence Suite. It was only launched last month, and it's called Cortana Intelligence Suite with Bing Predicts. This gives you access to Microsoft's secret data, to the Bing corpus of the searches, anonymized but very valuable, the stuff you would never in your life be able to access unless you happen to be working for Google. All right, with that in mind, for the very final demo of this presentation, I would like to show you how I am combining Cortana Intelligence Suite together with SQL Server, R services, and for a good measure, with a little bit of Power BI. So for that, let me just switch over. So for that, I'm going to show you where I started working on a forecasting project. This is actually a standard sample that I have modified quite heavily. Whoops, that's not the one. Let me just discard those changes. And that should make a little bit more sense in a moment. Apologies for that. That's a cool feature. If somebody messes around with your stuff in Azure Machine Learning, which is the key component of Cortana, the discard changes button does exactly that. Because of course, I have people collaborating with me on these projects all the time. And the run history button allows me to see all the previous versions. Unfortunately, not past the delete point. So if somebody deletes it, all you've got is be a little bit upset or have a backup. Anyway, what's the task? The task is, can you Rafal predict what happens next on a data set of financial results? So month after month after month after month, over here, these represent sales. And the question is, after those 126 months of sales, what happens next? How do you do forecasting in Cortana Intelligence Suite? Well, if you want to do forecasting in Azure Machine Learning, you use R, or you use R, or you use R, or you use R, or you use R. Basically, you use R. And in case you think R is very complex for this purpose, let me show you that it is very trivial. Very few lines of code, of which these lines of code do nothing useful at all. These lines of code do nothing useful at all, it's just plumbing. All the useful stuff is over here. In fact, the most useful bit is this bit here, where I'm building an autoregressive integrated moving average from the data that was provided above this task in the flow, and then using the just generated model, I forecast what will happen in the future. And then I just need to visualize whether my forecast is accurate enough. So how do I do that? Well, I started doing this over here, visualizing it in Cortana, but very quickly I realized that this was looking a little bit ugly, and also I could do a little bit better. You see, that red line is my forecast. The blue line is what really happened. And the red line could be a little closer to the blue line. So how did I improve on that? I improved on that, first of all, by taking this code and putting it locally into my R server. So we are moving from what was in the cloud, I'm just going to switch over right now, to exactly the same code, except this code is now running entirely on premises, just resave, in my R server. Where is the file? Remember this path, blah, 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 and remember the file name. ArimaSeasonal.r. Will I remember it? No. So I have a little file that contains the name of the file. Let me just quickly find that guy and let's copy it to the clipboard. All right. How can I run R locally and visualize it in the cloud and integrate with Cortana? Well, I'm going to use Power BI for that purpose. So I'm starting my Power BI Desktop, a free product from Microsoft. And using Power BI Desktop, I will execute that code using R server. How do you do that? I do that by getting the data using its R connectivity. Where is it hiding? There you go. This is the R script connector. I connect, but I don't copy and paste my entire code. All I copy is that path surrounded by the source command, which basically says, execute this file as if it was just over here. In a moment, it ran it, our server locally ran it, and it's returning the original data and the results, which I'm going to visualize for you as soon as it returns it. It's a bit silly, it has to do it twice, but there's no easy way to overcome that. All right, so at this point, let me show you the original data. Let's just make it look like a proper line chart that it is. Let's overlay over that the forecast. Okay, so it's a nice, sexy visualization. Let me save it before I lose it. I'm going to call it my Atlanta Wednesday demo. Far too fast in typing. All right, but as I told you, I'm not happy with this forecast. That line is not sticking to the green line as well as it could. So I'm going to use the kindergarten level improvement on forecasts. Any statistical child in a kindergarten learns that the best way to improve on a forecast is to use two different techniques, add them up to each other, and divide by two. Basically, calculate an average of two different forecasts. All right, I'm saving that modified code, and now just by pressing the refresh button, pay attention to the line. Look at the line. Look at the line. Look at the, wow, wasn't that sexy? There you go. So, thank you, thank you, thank you. I know I have 1 minute, 30 seconds left. I'm not done yet because, of course, now I have to publish that back into the cloud so that all of my cool business users can benefit from this technology. And whilst this is publishing into the cloud, do I have to log in? Hopefully I don't have to log in. All right, let's see. Does it open? All right, so it's of course in the cloud, but I'm not quite done yet. There's one more bit I would like to do. Is reflector running? Oh, Yeah, it is. All right. Here's Rafael's iPad. Hopefully no rude emails will come in the meantime. All right. There's the Power BI app. That's something for a client. Reports. There you go. Atlanta Wednesday demo. There you go. It's already there. And look. And this is running on my iPad. And, you know, that was like R at the speed of thought from, actually, where was my data? What was I doing? If you think about it, I don't even know anymore where my analysis is. At this point, most of the time when I'm analyzing stuff for my customers, I am genuinely a little lost because some of it is in the cloud. The analysis is done using on-prem R server. The data came from Cortana Azure ML, but I have modified it here and Power BI is visualizing it on all of the devices. What's my point? My point is that this is one of the biggest reasons why I merge all of those technologies together. And if you want to be doing the stuff the way I tend to do it, just consider combining SQL Server 2016 with a little bit of R, with a little bit of Cortana Intelligence Suite. Use them for the best purposes. Remember, SQL is the best environment for manipulating the data, but it's much more than that. And what will you get? You're going to get advanced analytics with data science, and you're going to make that first step towards real-world pragmatic artificial intelligence, not just some science fiction. If you would like to learn about it with me, my last chance to remind you, I am coming on the 7th of November to Chicago. I still have a few places left. I would be honored to torture you for a week with all of those concepts in detail, like validity and all the stuff that I've hidden, of course, because it's only a limited presentation in duration. Other than that, all that remains for me to do is to ask you to please complete the evaluation form, and I hope to see you soon. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.